This is Romance Watson welcoming you to another session of Software Modernization with Mark Schroeder. Today we are speaking with Stephen Hefner of Pennington Systems Incorporated. In 1977, Stephen Hefner founded Pennington Systems Incorporated to develop and market systems software products and services. He was key in designing, implementing, and documenting many of Pennington's software products, including Xtran, an expert system for rule-driven symbolic manipulation of computer languages, such as analysis, translation, and re-engineering of second through fourth generation computer languages, markup languages, scripting languages, and database languages. A few years later, Stephen was a lecturer and adjunct associate professor at the Wharton Business School at University of Pennsylvania in his field. So now let's take this opportunity to learn more about software modernization and integration. Here is your host, Mark Schroeder, as he interviews Stephen Hefner.
Steve, could you give me a brief overview of your experience in software modernization?
Sure. Actually, I've been involved with it since I went independent in 1972. In fact, my first job as an independent contractor was to hand port a database package from an older IBM assembler to a DEC assembler, which was much more modern at the time. I've done a lot of modernization work since then, eventually getting into the tools side of it by creating software modernization tools.
What approach do you think is the best approach to modernize legacy applications?
Well, there are a number of things. One of the keys, I believe, is to port the legacy app as unchanged as possible, making changes either before or after the port and testing them thoroughly either way. Usually there's a backlog of changes sitting there waiting to be done when the port comes along. And there's a very strong temptation to say, well, as long as we're changing the code, let's go ahead and make some of these improvements. The problem with that is that it confounds the testing process, because if you do that, you're not testing the same system after the port. So that's one of the keys to it. The other key, I believe, is to do a very thorough assessment of the legacy app prior to launching into the actual modernization. And that assessment, in my view, is critical. If you shortcut that, you're going to pay very dearly for it later on.
So you do not recommend changing the system at all while you're in the modernization process. Some people I've talked to, they actually say, you know, you can do some pretty good tweaks here and there to come up with a better application afterwards.
Well, you can, but that should wait until it's been ported. Sometimes there are changes you must make. Sometimes changes are dictated by the very fact that you're changing languages or changing the platform. And in that case, you want to minimize those and isolate them as much as you can. And then, of course, you have to do them. But what I was talking about are changes that are not necessary for the port, that are extraneous to it, that have been requested by users or have been in the change backlog for a while. And as I said, there's a strong temptation to do that, but I think it should be resisted.
All right. Another thing I'd like to do is ask you, everybody has their sort of definition on software modernization. What do you define software modernization as?
Well, there are a number of aspects to it. There are a number of reasons people modernize software. One of the reasons is to escape from a dead or dying language or platform, or a platform for which maintenance has become very expensive, or for which it's getting harder and harder to find programmers. That's the essence of modernization, in the sense that you're creating a more modern end result, which can be more maintainable, has better tools available for it, and so forth. So that's one point. Another point is that people want to modernize in order to repurpose the code and make it serve functions that it wasn't originally designed for. The obvious candidate for that would be webifying, Web 2.0, service-oriented architectures, things like that. A third impetus for modernization is the rather old nature of the user interface, green screens on mainframes, things like that. And people want to make that more modern and higher productivity for the end user. So those are some of the reasons that people want to modernize. Ultimately, it boils down to code transformations to serve those purposes that I just outlined.
So do you consider modernization purely a code transformation, or if someone takes a screen scraper or something that changes the front end, would you consider that a modernized application as well?
Well, it's modernized to that extent, of course, but I think the longer answer is that real thorough modernization requires re-architecting. And the real question there is how much of the massive investment in the legacy app that has been made by the owner can be salvaged and moved forward without compromising the modernizing process. So for example, if the architecture of the legacy app is sound, but is not well suited for a more interactive approach to the app, then it may have to be re-architected. If the architecture is poor, perhaps it was originally or it has become so over time through degradation, then it definitely must be re-architected, and the chances are it can't be salvaged. On the other hand, there are many applications out there that serve their purpose very well. They are good quality, and what needs to be changed to modernize them is not deep in the application. In those cases, I think it's the whole process can be automated very highly. And I actually would say that even the re-architecting process is amenable to a certain amount of automation as well.
So it sounds like you propose to do automated modernization versus some other approach to modernization.
Well, it's always a combination, but it's not 100% or 0%. It's not either or. It's really how much can you automate without compromising the integrity and quality of the result of the modernization process. My view is, as the author of a software modernization automation tool, that the process can be automated more than most people realize, but it requires a powerful tool, actually what I call a meta tool, to do that.
In the modernization process, can you give me briefly the major steps that you take in a modernization project?
Sure. We break the modernization process down into three major steps. The first is the assessment. I mentioned that before, and it's critical. It's, among other things, it includes an impact assessment regarding the changes that are going to have to be made to modernize the application. And then we recommend that a pilot modernization be scheduled after the assessment, in which a representative subset of the total app is modernized reiteratively with tweaks to the modernization process to get the best result. Once that's been done and the good result has been achieved, then the third step is full production, where the rest of the code is then modernized. That pilot process is important because improvement to the process is by nature iterative and converging over a period of time. And so you want to keep modernizing the same modules over and over with tweaks to the modernization rules, be they automated or manual, until you've got the best result. Then those same rules can be applied more broadly to the full production process.
So I guess those tweaks are helping you get closer and closer to 100% automated transformation. Is that right?
In the case of automation, yes. But even for the manual parts of the modernization process, those tweaks are necessary anyway, because even manual rules can be improved through experience. And therefore, you're going to iterate on improvements to those rules on the same code over and over, whether those rules are manual or automated.
Now, software engineering itself, it seems like we can work on that and make it a little bit more modern in its approach. And you've suggested in some other conversations that perhaps we can do some modernization with the engineering process itself.
Yes, I think so. In my view, automation is just beginning to sink its teeth into the software development process. I believe includes analysis, re-engineering, and translation activities in addition to the original creation of the code. And the availability of flexible and powerful meta tools is, again, in my opinion, the key to progress in automating the overall process. Now, I tend to break software engineering down into two major categories, and that's code creation and code maintenance and enhancement. But even in the code creation process, I believe that automation can play a major part. The idea is to offload the details and trivia of the creation process from the programmer to an automated process and leave the more creative and higher level aspects of the code creation process for the programmer. And that can be done both during the code creation process itself and after the code's been created, in improving that code and making sure that it's appropriate quality level to go into a build, for example.
I guess that's sort of a next step after a 4GL language, because, you know, with 4GLs, they basically generate your code for you also.
Right, from a model typically, or from a very high level, the domain-specific language. Actually, I don't distinguish too much between models that generate code, like a UML model, for example, 4GLs that are domain-specific and very high level, and 3GLs with very powerful run libraries that can be called from the 3GL. In my view, those are functionally equivalent, and which one you choose is a matter more of how it fits with your development team than anything else. I think you can get pretty equivalent results from all three. And all three of them do automate the process in the sense of building on code reuse, because code reuse is a major key to code quality. And if you think about it, reusing code, it means that you're automating the code creation process.
Oh, that makes sense. So can you explain, how does the tool that you developed fit into the whole automated software engineering area?
Well, what we've developed is a thing called Xtran, which is a software engineering meta tool. It is rule-driven, and its rules language can be used to automate the three major areas of software engineering activity on existing code: analysis, re-engineering, and translation. So as I was saying, I tend to break the automation of software engineering into code creation and what comes afterwards. Our meta tool is mostly applicable to existing code, but of course that code might have been created 5 minutes ago, or it might have been created 20 years ago.
Now, how would a company approach cutting costs and building better software? Do you think that the automated approach like this can help them manage that better?
Absolutely. First of all, when you automate a process, you get higher quality, assuming the automation is well done. This is because automated processes don't make mistakes, and human beings do. And also because automating a process like software engineering abstracts the process up a level or two and makes it easier to deal with the what's really important in what you're doing as opposed to the details. So that means that you're going to get better structure, better architecture, a deeper understanding of the nature of the application that's being implemented. All of that is possible if you abstract it up through automating the process. And automation delivers a lot of benefits, again, assuming it's well done. Obviously, it's going to reduce development time. It's going to improve the quality of the result. It's going to reduce costs. It's going to reduce risk, and that's a major one, in my opinion, because we all know that software engineering projects have a very high risk component, and a fair number of them actually fail. If you automate the process, you reduce that risk substantially. So there are a lot of benefits that accrue. I think the thing that's been holding us back is the unavailability of powerful enough tools to do the job.
Does it matter what kind of target language you're going for? Can you be a Java shop or a .NET shop and still use the same tool to do this automation?
Yes, if the tool is up to the job. What we've done is we've developed a software engineering automation meta tool that covers a broad range of language, all the way from assemblers to 3GLs, 4GLs, scripting languages, database languages, domain-specific languages. And then we've also made it easy to add languages because we have automated parsing and what we call rendering. I use the term rendering to mean bringing the code back out from its internal symbolic form, back out as text source code that human beings can deal with. So we've automated a lot of that, which makes it pretty easy to add languages to its repertoire. I think the interesting question about languages is when you're moving from one language to another, you have to look at the functionality that is in the old language and see whether that exists in the new one, and if not, you're going to have to create it. That can be done through run libraries, it can be done through classes if it's an OO language, it can be done through emulation if you absolutely have to. So there are a number of aspects to that, but we have a philosophy that you try to migrate to the native nature of the target environment as much as you can and have a minimum of artifacts from the old environment in the migrated code.
I guess if you're using automation, you know, one single tool to produce your code, you could almost keep a lot of your logic in there, and then you could generate for whatever language you want as long as it fits within those specifications.
Yes, and in fact, what you're really talking about is a high-level domain-specific language. As it happens with our tool, it's very easy to do that because you write rules that traverse the high-level representation and generate the lower-level representation, whether that be C++ or C or Java or COBOL for that matter. And this is basically a code generator type of approach. And by keeping the representation at a higher level, you mentioned modeling tools that you can push a button and generate code. That's the same basic idea. You obviously reduce significantly the requirements to create and maintain that code because you're at a higher level. Fewer statements or fewer model components, whatever the case may be. Now, one interesting aspect of that, though, Mark, is that it forces the programmer to a higher level of ability and skill. In my view, as automation really digs into software development, we're going to have drastically fewer programmers, and they're going to be drastically higher average skill set and ability. That's the future that I see with the availability of powerful software engineering automation tools.
I was going to ask you that a little bit later, and might as well go through it now. Do you think the average programmer can learn how to do this, or are they, like you said, are they going to have to be more educated or better trained in order to think in this way?
Right. For example, with our meta tool, we do not recommend it for average programmers. We recommend it for senior systems programmers. The rules language that it has is very sophisticated, very powerful, and has built into the language itself some pretty sophisticated computer science concepts, such as recursion and abstraction and things like early and late binding, things like that. So a normal programmer, an average level programmer, is going to have a tough time with that. If that programmer is very bright and is enthusiastic, they may well be able to rise to the occasion and boost their ability up that level and become a systems programmer who can handle it. But mostly it's going to be the senior people who can do this. In fact, when we train people on the rules language for our meta tool, we require senior systems engineers for that.
So let's go on a little bit more into the engineering aspect. I think there's three basic categories for software engineering. Can you explain those to me? And then also, how does automation fit into these categories?
Sure. Okay. As I mentioned before, we break down software engineering activities on existing code into three major categories, and I'll explain each one. First one is analysis. This means that you are pulling information out of the code, but you're not transforming the code. You're not really touching the code at all. You're just getting stuff out of it. And that can be done for many, many reasons. Assessing code quality, doing impact assessment for changes, pulling functional spec out of the code because you lost yours or you never had one or it's too stale. So there's lots of reasons that you want to pull information out of the code because, after all, the code is, in fact, the only 100% guaranteed accurate functional specification for your system. It's just that it's unwieldy to try to use it for that. So that's analysis. The second one I refer to is reengineering. And by that, I mean making transformations to the code without changing its language, because I believe that a language change is enough different that it deserves its own category. So by reengineering, we're talking about applying changes to the code. And there's lots of reasons people want to do that. They may want to improve the code. For example, we've got rules for our meta tool to do automated code improvement by structuring it, getting rid of go-tos, decompiling low-level stuff to a higher level, things like that, bringing the code to a higher level of quality. People may need to re-engineer it for a platform shift. They're going to move from one operating system to another or maybe from one database to another, so that's going to require changes. They may have in-house reasons to make transformations. For example, they may change an in-house run library calling sequence and have to go through and change all of the calls. Well, that can usually be highly automated. That one is actually an example of what I call ad hoc transformations as opposed to systematic transformations. And then the third category is translation. And by that, I mean that you actually change the language without disturbing the functionality of the original application. There are reasons, lots of reasons to do that too. As I mentioned before, getting out of an obsolete or failing language. Also consolidating languages. For instance, if a large company acquires three small companies and they all have different programming languages in their shops, they're probably going to want to consolidate all of that onto one language over a period of time. So that's another reason to move from one language to another. Another is to get into a more modern language with better tools, et cetera. So those are all typically moving either at the same level, like 3GL to 3GL, or moving up a level from 3GL to 4GL, let's say. But if you think about it, a compiler or an assembler is doing language transformation as well. It's moving down in level from, say, a 3GL to assembler or a 4GL to a 3GL if it's a code generator. Those are all language transformations, and I lump them all into that same broad category. Our MetaTool is set up so that it can actually automate all three of those major categories with the same rules language, same skill set.
The rules language that you have is quite important to learn. Do you provide in-house training, or what kind of training do you provide for that?
We require actually a 5-day training course for anybody who licenses our MetaTool. And as I mentioned before, the trainees must be senior people. What that does is it gets them to what I call solo status. It's like piloting an airplane. If you've gotten to solo status, you can get the thing off the ground, fly it around, and get it back down without killing yourself. And that's really the objective of that 5 days. Over a period of time after that, they will gain proficiency. My objective when I train people is that by the end of those 5 days, they have a good understanding. They know where to look for more information in the documentation, and they're actually productive at that point.
That's still not too bad in 5 days to be able to become productive. You know, some languages take quite a while, you know, 3GLs or 4GLs, they take 6 months to a year before you can become really productive.
This is true. I'm the author of Xtran, if that hasn't been obvious by now. When I designed the rules language, one of my objectives was to make sure that actual mortal human beings could learn it and use it. I have seen tools in which that had rules languages, but they were so hard to use that it was really hard to deploy them. And I wanted, and sometimes only a couple of mad geniuses in a back room knew how to make them do what they do. And my objective was to get this MetaTool out into the real world among senior people, of course, but have real people doing real work with it. And therefore, it is, in fact, learnable by a senior person in 5 days. Now, they usually get a headache about day number two, but by day number three, the headache's beginning to fade, and they really like it because of the power that they see in it.
The companies or the people you target, are you targeting companies that are going to go and help other companies transform their software, or is it primary larger companies that are going to do it in-house?
All of the above, all of the above. Yeah, basically our target market for what we have, our MetaTool, is any organization that has responsibility for the care and feeding of a significant body of code in any language. So that's a huge market.
And that's pretty much everybody out there with a computer system.
Well, almost. It doesn't really apply to organizations that have smaller systems for which they're responsible, where there's not enough of an economy of scale to automate, or it doesn't really fit with people who don't have the in-house skill set to do this kind of thing. What we really are looking for is we're looking for people who either create their own software so that they're ISVs or computer manufacturers with their own in-house system software, things like that, or, as you mentioned, organizations who deliver software services to their customers and can use this automation to get all the benefits that automation provides when they're doing that. Especially with the service companies, they're usually dealing with existing code because they're typically taking over responsibility for a body of code from a customer. So automation is ideal for them.
And what's the best way for someone to get involved in using your product?
Well, we require, as I mentioned, we require training in order to learn the rules language, and that's really the only way you can get an idea of what the tool can do. So it does require a bit of an investment in order to get to that point. However, prior to that, we're happy to do some demonstrations, things like that, using users' code to give them an idea of what can be done. And under non-disclosure, we can actually take them through some examples of rules that automate something so they can get a better idea of that. We do that quite a bit. But the rules language itself is proprietary and confidential, so it requires a non-disclosure.
So you would end up doing like a proof of concept for someone to see if it really is a fit for them.
Yes, that's the way we usually like to approach it. It's good for them because they see their own code being either analyzed or transformed by the MetaTool. And then we give them a good idea of how long that took and what was involved in creating the rules or using off-the-shelf rules to do it.
And what's your website address in case someone wants to go and take a look at your stuff?
That's www.pennington.com, P as in Paul, E-N-N-I-N-G-T-O-N. There's a lot of information on there about Xtran and about us and where we came from and what we do. And in addition to all of that, there are over 50 usage examples showing how people can use Xtran for lots of different things in the three major categories that I mentioned, analysis, reengineering, and translation. So there's a lot of good stuff on there.
All right, that sounds good. We're pretty much close to the end of our interview. Is there anything else you'd like to add that we maybe have just brushed over or haven't really talked about?
No, I don't think so. I think we've covered the ground very well.
Well, good. I've appreciated the time with you, Stephen, and hope that we can bring some people to start trying out your software.
Thank you for joining us for another session of Software Modernization. Please be sure to check back often to find more interviews and additional resources. Our goal is to build a warehouse of information on software application modernization. For more information on software modernization and how you can subscribe to our free services, please visit us at www.softwaremodernization.com. We are always looking for experts in software modernization who are interested in sharing knowledge on this subject. If you are an expert and want to be interviewed by Mark, please visit softwaremodernization.com and click on the interview link.